and permanently incorporate these subtle energies into your elemental by use of communion breathing technique. The communion breathing technique is what I discussed about breathing in solar prana. That's one paradigm of that, is that I gave you the paradigm of how you breathe in solar prana. But what are the basic elements of communion breathing technique? First, it's looking at the object, looking at that which has for you a great gift. We live in the invisible Garden of Eden. We live in paradise. It's here right now. Master Jesus told us that. We haven't really been expelled from the Garden of Paradise. We're really right here. And the fruits are hanging all around. All we have to do is reach out and pick them and eat them, but they're invisible. And in order to taste these fruits, which are for us, we have to see them. We have to discern them. And then when we see them, and they are fruits of bliss, when we see them, we have to ingest them, just like we eat food, just like we eat food in a paradise. And these energies on the vital etheric level are called in Sanskrit by the word prana, but classic prana is only one dimension of these forces. If we were to breathe prana, solar prana, as I said, from the sunrise in the morning, what we would do is we would fix our eyes on the sun. We would look at it. We would see it with our eyes. We would also appreciate it. We would have homage to it. And then we would inhale through both nostrils slowly and deeply while looking at it, and while also understanding and visualizing that we were taking in from the top of our head down to the bottom. And then when we reached the top of the breath, we would hold it and we would close our eyes. Very important to close the eyes. And we would hold it in the way that I explained holding it. And then we'd breathe out slowly and end with a hum, visualizing the energies all coming up and filling us and then being sealed. Now, this is the basic technique for communion breathing technique. This technique can be used to ingest and take into your aura the higher etheric forces of any natural thing, beautiful beauty, fragrance, the beautiful fragrance of flowers, a great and sacred landscape, individual stars with which you may commune. These forces I call ultra-pranic forces, that they are the etheric nectars and blessings always available to those who can perceive them. And as I say, like divine fruits in the unseen Garden of Eden that is our true but invisible environment and home, they are there to be harvested, eaten, and assimilated by spiritual workers of flesh, because they are our actual true food. That which truly nourishes us, that which is eternal in us, and that which is persistent in us, is nourished not so much by the fruit of the body, but by the fruit of the soul, which is music and which is beauty and all these things. Now, I also give a technique for breath in conjunction practices with sexual love, which I've written down and you can read, and it probably is not really appropriate for you at this time because you're not with a long-term partner or wife. But normally speaking, one does not do meditation soon after one has had sexual intercourse, because orgasm or ejaculation create a condition in the aura that make it vulnerable to cracking, sort of, that makes it kind of brittle in a way, such that it runs the energy downwards through the generative chakras, and then to run it up again in a high force to the higher chakras makes it brittle, and it can make, the way Sarah Daring puts it, is cracks in the aura. It can make you vulnerable. It's like having a lot of cuts in your body. So it's generally, unless you're used to running it up and down like that, which I am. This is the lecture concerning the long life empowerment. There have been many different kinds of adepts in many different traditions that have concern themselves with the prolongation of life. Their concern has not been for the purpose of extending their enjoyment of the physical externals of life, or because they have been afraid of death. Their reason for prolonging their life has been to maintain their source of teaching and their
their light on the planet for the sake of other students and other disciples, or for the sake of the continuation of certain kinds of work, for the sake of the completion of certain kinds of work, the establishment of certain kinds of work. And they have also been concerned to do so because the human mind and the human experience are very finite. Human life has been rather short in many periods on this earth, and it is not possible for a human being to assimilate at a high enough level to achieve really high wisdom in a short period like 30 or 35 or 40 years. In fact, it is only after about the age of 40 that enough has been assimilated that it is possible to even begin the path of adeptship. And therefore, long life has been a terribly important issue. We read of the one we call the Diamond Christ, Padmasambhava, who, when he came to the land of Tibet, spent several years doing two things, one of which was working with the invisibles of the land, preaching Dharma to them, which of course is done not through words, but through mental communications that are much faster than words, and converting many of them to be his allies rather than his enemies, so that when the time came to speak to the people and to enter their minds and their personalities and to interrelate with them on the much slower modality that we have when we have to use speech and logic and so on, that he would not be opposed by the invisible forces and that the Dharma would be able to be planted and spread in Tibet. And the second thing that he did to prepare himself for that work was for 5 years he did long life practices with the great adept, female adept, who was pictured on some of the tantras, but not as the main female adept, Sogyo, but the great Mandarava. And they worked together on alchemical and psychological and neurotic practices that enabled him to achieve enough strength and vigor and power and life in his body that he was able to remain in Tibet for a long enough time to truly establish Buddhism there. This is not the modality that we operate in for the long life empowerment, nor do we operate in alchemical modalities of the West that you may have read about, that are done through the work with the retort and the alchemist's laboratory. We do not do the work in black and the work in white and the work in red, or the great work as defined by alchemy, and we do not try to create a physical stone or pill that we take. And we do not have anything comparable to what the alchemists call the wet process. We do have something somewhat comparable to what they call the dry process. And that is the work that we do with ourselves on the cellular level through the application of divine energies that are made available to us through three lines of transmission, which I will discuss in a moment. We work with in our own body cells, not psychologically, but dynamically, and we work in the context of Western medicine and in the context of the best that is known and understood about the physical body, which we call the elemental. And we work in the context of our initiation and the empowerment that we are transmitted in the initiation. There are three lines that come to us that empower us in the long life work. The first is coming through Tibetan Buddhism, and that is an empowerment that has been specifically intended for Templars to be developed by means of Templar modalities, but through a long lineage of empowerment of individual lamas who have themselves achieved long life empowerment and ripened it and handed down the energy, the juice, to their disciples who have achieved it and handed it on down. And such a person it is who has handed it over to us. That is our first line that empowers us. The second comes through my own teacher, Mother Jenny, who lived to the age of 97 in spite of very severe body frailties. When she was very young, most people considered that she would be the first who would die of all of her friends. In fact, she outlived everybody in her family until she was just one by herself. And it is through the spiritual work and teaching of Mother Jenny and the empowerment that comes through that line and through me from her and through her teachers that we have another line of long life empowerment in the temple. And the third is that which is existing, untapped and unused and unknown through the apostolic succession, the lineage from the Master Jesus. And it is out of that that the main application has been formulated, and out of that that we work these powers. Now, in the written materials, we explain what the importance of a long and healthy life is, and that the length of the personal life in body is vital for the kind of work especially that is now being done and is necessary to be done on this planet and with humanity. That I recommend that you read through carefully. We refer back to other Western traditions, such as those of the Comte de Saint-Germain, that are alchemical traditions in which the life is prolonged for the sake of the work. The nature and potential of the physical body is an area that we speak about in the written discourse. And in it, we specify the fact that early death, and by early death we mean a death before the age of 100 or so. Early death is not a genetic time bomb that just comes off. Aging is not something that is uncontrollable or something that just occurs by nature in the body with no help for it. In fact, as Western medicine has discovered, aging is a kind of hodgepodge of all kinds of causes that are not necessarily genetic causes. Basically, untreated disorder in the system that leads to diseases that are fatal, heart disease, emphysema, things like this, or stresses in the system that do not allow the system to regenerate itself as quickly as it needs to, and it loses ground and eventually debilitates itself, or other kinds of exposures that are made. For example, the skin ages very quickly if it's constantly exposed to a lot of sunlight and ultraviolet light and so on. And we point out that the physical body is a plastic, renewable vehicle capable of long and useful service, given three basic foundations. The first is good karma. You have to have karma that will support long life empowerment. And there are instances of people who will do the empowerment who will not live a long life. And I've discussed some of these situations in the written materials. But generally, it's assumed that if you are working in this kind of material and initiated into the temple, that you do have the karma, the proper kind of karma for this. The second foundation is preventative and curative maintenance, and that is something that you must be very, very religious about doing. You have to work on your health on a daily basis. You have to exercise, you have to eat properly, all the kinds of stuff that Mama always said you had to do. This is stuff you have to do for this. And finally, you have to have protection from catastrophic injury or attack on yourself. And that is done, of course, the foundation for that is laid in the first empowerment, but you have to be vigilant. It is possible for you to get hurt very badly by dark forces that want to hurt you if you're not vigilant, and that has, the records of that are in many, many places to be found of people who were quite advanced on the path of adeptship and who were shot down because they were not vigilant. So, given these three foundations, good karma, preventative and curative maintenance, and protection from catastrophic injury, we have what we need to accomplish the long life, to ripen the long life empowerment and to accomplish its ends. Now, concerning preventative and curative maintenance, it is absolutely necessary for people to understand nutrition, and to understand not only the kind of physical nutrition that is understood in the West, but the pranic elements of that and how the system is nourished by different kinds of solar prana and so on, which we do teach. It is absolutely necessary to understand that Western medicine has the best theory and the best understanding of the physical health of the physical body, and that must be the primary tool that you use for caring for your body, and then you may use as secondary tools non-traditional medicines and things like this, but you must depend basically upon Western medicine modified and illuminated by traditional medicines, and that it is absolutely necessary for you to pay as much attention to your body as you do to your automobile or your computer or any other kind of apparatus that you have, any other kind of vehicle. You have to maintain it. You have to keep it up to date. If it needs upgrades, you do that. If it needs, if it starts having problems, you go get things replaced and so on. Your vehicles have to be cared for, and the very first place to start with that is to start to become aware of that. And very many people who are on the spiritual path are very unaware of their bodies, and very unaware of what their bodies are saying to them. It's very important to get very in tune with the body and to listen to it and feel your way through it. And this all comes down to what we call preventive medicine. You've got to know what your blood pressure is. You've got to know when you're starting to get ill, how to deal with it. You've got to know how medicines affect you in a certain way, how the vitamin C affects you and things like this. Much that you need to know about this and become familiar with if you're not already familiar with these things. You've got to learn and know about foods and about clean foods. And you've got to practice certain kinds of dietary things, not gross radical dietary practices, but intelligent dietary practices. Because what you eat each day is a very great determiner of what you are as a physical entity in the long run. You must understand these principles and you must honor them. And the other thing is you must become aware of whatever it is you put into your body, including medicines, that you are in charge of directing these elementary forces, that when anything enters your body, you meet it and you greet it. You can meet it and greet it either outside the door or at the door or inside the house. It doesn't matter as long as it's done. And this, by the way, is one of the principles that is used, that grace at a meal is sort of the exoteric form for doing, but not understood, of course, by many people. But anything that you take into your elemental that's going to be assimilated has to be done so consciously on certain parameters, and it has to be guided in. If you're going to take some medicine, if you have an infection and you're taking medicine for that infection, you bless that medicine, you speak to it, you commune with it, and you make it real clear what it's supposed to do, and you speak to your body and you make it clear to your body how it's supposed to treat this, and then you go ahead and take it. You don't just pop it and forget about it and think, well, it'll take care of itself. Much takes care of itself. Much is automatic and much is autonomic. But when you're dealing with fixing glitches in the elementary, you have to do so very consciously. Part of a maintenance practice is at least once a year to go through a kind of upgrade of the first empowerment vehicles that you established, the mirror and the shield and the beast, and to work with revisualizing them and recharging them on the new moon, at least one new moon a year, and especially the new moon following Wesak is a especially good time to do that. And you have to keep attentive. You must be conscious and attentive about what you're doing and what's around you and what's coming to you. Just as you are when you're driving, you drive defensively. You have to live defensively. You have to look around. Very often, when you are under attack by an advanced member of the Dark Brotherhood, and that will happen, very often the attacks are very subtle, and they start with very tiny, small things. Mother Jenny used to say, it's the small things that trip us up, the tiny things that trip us up. We have to be on the lookout for these small things, these tiny things. And I can tell you stories about attempts to harm me that have been done through the most ingenious methods, that only through deep understanding was I able to thwart. And very often you yourself won't be able to be harmed, and so it will be an attempt to get someone very close to you or someone who means a lot to you. And so you have to extend your protection to those around you, and you have to do so consciously. And you have to be aware when you sleep and when you're awake. You have to be conscious and aware. I'm not talking about being paranoid. I'm just talking about being aware, be observant. Inattention is a kind of sleep that you cannot afford. Now, the long life empowerment is the gateway to really profound, occult, invisible service and the development of all the higher latent human facilities. And that is why it is done in the first degree, in the diaconate degree, and why it is offered at this point, not long after the first empowerment. Because really, for the kind of work that one will be doing, especially when one achieves the Adeptus Minor degree, the priesthood, one has to be in a daily long life practice. Now, the Master Jesus taught us that we must first struggle successfully with the inner evil before we can overcome the evil of the world. That we must master the inner nature before we have mastery over the outer. And that involves communion with elementals and things. And that when we understand, when we have developed a deep understanding, then will our inner nature rule over the outer nature. The long life empowerment is a means not only of prolonging the physical life, but of optimizing the physical health and the mental alertness, and of maintaining oneself in a state completely ready for service. If service is not done, if instead the long life empowerment is ripened and used in a way that is wasteful and not useful, it will lose its effect. Because what happens in the long life empowerment is a channel, a very subtle, very tiny capillary is opened between the Brahmarandra or the Sahasrara chakra and the divine monadic self. A direct connection that does not exist, normally does not exist at all in the physical world, because things in the physical world are reflected. They are reflections of reality. They are not reality, but it actually builds a connection, a real connection, directly to your physical elemental, to your self as you see yourself as a physical body, and to your systems and at the cellular level and so on. It builds this connection, and it does this through the vehicle of violet light. And when it builds this connection, it's like a tiny, tiny, tiny capillary. And if the practice is not done every day, if it is not done on every setting and rising of the sun, that capillary closes. And you, in order to get it back, you have to go through an entire month. Again, you have to start from scratch, go to square one, and do one entire lunar cycle of the long life practices in order to activate that channel again. So you cannot miss one day. If you miss a morning, fine, do it in the afternoon. If you miss an afternoon, fine, do it later in the day. But do it, if at all possible, before the sun sets. And by all means, do it before you go to sleep, if you ever miss it. You mustn't miss it. The practice is very short. It only takes a minute or less in a day to do the practice. But if you don't do the practice, you lose the benefit of it. And the second thing is, if you do the practice and open this connection and create the connection, but you do not serve in your life and you do not serve the great work and the spiritual work of the planet and the guidance that is coming to all of us and so on, if you do not do this, that capillary will close as well. It won't be able to stay open. It won't be able to remain connected to you. So long life practice, as we're transmitting it, is something that can only be done by selfless servers of humanity and the planet who are on the road to adeptship. That is, they have the discipline and the understanding to do daily what they need to do. So, with these things said, let me say that the powers within one's own flesh that are developed through the long life practices evolve into those necessary to receive the healing empowerment, which is working with angelic forces, and the root chakra empowerment, which is working with elemental forces, and the evocation and projector and the iliaster type of empowerment, which is working with divine creative manifestation in Aum, and the astral worker initiation, which leads into the priest adept degrees, and which involves lucid work at night, when you are finally ready to be awake 24 hours a day while your body sleeps or whether your body's awake, and when you finally have achieved the continuity of consciousness that allows you to do this sort of thing, then the skills that you gain through working the long way from life empowerment and keeping it alive and keeping it ripe will come into play there. So long life is very, very important empowerment. It's a very simple thing. What's done is very simple, but it's very important. The empowerment itself is received over a period of one lunar cycle from new moon to new moon, and it's done by means of the placing the long life stone, which I will give to each individual, in a pouch over the monadic heart center, and it is worn there during the time of the actual practice, the long life practice itself, and it can be worn, it can simply be placed in the pouch and worn for the whole whatever morning exercise you might have with meditation and so on, and then integrating into that this very brief long life practice. But it has to be over the heart for the time that the practice is done each morning, and then you may opt to remove the long life stone from the pouch after the entire lunar cycle is completed, or you may keep it in the pouch. The stone comes itself wrapped in a little violet silk cloth, and it's probably best to keep it in that cloth. You don't want to expose the stone to sunlight or direct sunlight. You don't want anyone to touch it, anyone else to touch it during the period of your empowerment, and no one but another Templar to have anything to do with it or handle it afterwards. However, you yourself may be able to pass this empowerment on to another person by using your stone to incubate another similar stone for another person, and that is done by putting your stone in the physical contact with the stone that is to be incubated over one full lunar cycle from new moon to new moon, and then removing it and putting the new stone in a silk, violet silk, and giving that to the person. And that person may then, assuming the person is a Templar and is initiated and has received the authorizations to do this, may use that as a long life stone, and from which he may incubate others. Once the empowerment has been completed over the first month, the practice that you do in the first month is continued for the rest of your life. It's not stopped, but it is not necessary to wear the long life stone over the Monadic Heart Center after that if you don't wish to do so. It should be kept in a very sacred place that's dark and wrapped in the violet silk, however. Now, the way that the empowerment is received, and